This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, and I'm Doug Pollard, bringing it to you once again. Our topic tonight is censorship, whether it's the self-censorship of certain television stations in response to public pressure, or the government's ham-fisted attempts to censor the internet. Communications Minister Stephen Conroy has changed his mind so many times over what the government's proposed mandatory internet filter will or won't block online, it's hard to know whether it's a good idea or even a practical one or not. Geordie Guy of Electronic Frontiers Association will try to sort it out for us. One of the potential casualties of any legally enforced internet blockade could be information and education on a range of topics such as anorexia, euthanasia and fetish sites. One Sydney leather club is concerned it may be unable to post instructional videos on playing Rough But Safe. Harley Dennett of Sydney Star Observer will have that story for us. And of course, we have to mention Home and Away and That Lesbian Kiss. Was there ever so much free publicity for Channel 7? Was it all just a beat-up to get us watch, in which case it succeeded brilliantly? Did the kiss really go ahead as planned, or has the story been toned down because of the bleatings of the Christian Taliban? In a moment, David Knox of TV Tonight gives us the benefit of his insider knowledge. He started out on Project Runway, now he's bringing gay radio to Bris Vegas with a new show up north on Nova. Lee Buchanan, front man of Camp As Tits, as it's called, will give us a taste of what he's bringing to the far north tonight. And Kay Sarah will peer beneath the bonnet at the antics of the Ayatollah and the Archbishop. Helping me out in the studio tonight, and back after something of an absence, stalwart campaigner Ron Thiel. Good evening, Ron.
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, team. Good evening, listeners.
So, where have you been?
I've been in Hamilton in southwest Victoria, one of those trendy little towns.
Trendy. I've never heard of it. Never mind.
You should get out more, Doug.
We also have entertainer and newly minted Australian Michael Dalton. You might know him better as Dolly Diamond, but he's got his butch hat on tonight.
I sure have.
Yeah, can you get the voice down a wee bit lower, do you think?
I sure have.
Well, we'll have to work on that. We'll have to work on that one. And in honour of Youth Week here on Joy, we have budding journo, or possible radio producer, or whatever else, Adam Christou.
Good evening, listener.
Hello there. So what else do you do on Joy? I know Michael's got his own little show, don't you?
I do, on a Friday night called Holding It In with Lulu McClatchy.
So there you go, that's your plug. You get yours in now.
Well, if you turn on a few hours before, at about 2 till 4 on Friday afternoon, you can catch me on Flip the Tape, which is an indie music sort of show.
Ah, now I understand what was said to me earlier before we went on air. Okay, so that's the panel in here tonight. Well, a lesbian kiss in prime time, when kids might be watching. The usual suspects, the Australian Family Association, stroke Festival of Light, stroke National Civic Council, whatever the same small group of agitators are calling themselves this week, brewed up a storm of criticism in the press. But were we all just being manipulated by some clever spin doctors? Was the kiss toned down or not? The man most likely to know, David Knox of TV Tonight, is on the line now. Good evening, David.
Good evening, Doug.
Well, this has been a bit of a lot of noise about not very much, hasn't it?
A bit. A lot, yes. Goodness me. What a lot of stories have been spun about, some of which I've participated in myself, I must concede.
What's the real story here? Was this just a beat-up to get publicity for the show, or what?
I suppose we should start out by pointing out the good, you know, the positives that, you know, that comprise part of this story. The first thing is that to see gay representation in a 7 o'clock soap is a good thing. Many, many years ago, that would never have happened. This is obviously not the first time. Indeed, it's not the first time that Home and Away's done this either. So that's one good thing. And the fact that it's been a sympathetically treated story, because, again, historically, gays and lesbians in drama were treated as tragic figures or figures of derision or comedy or, humiliation.
In other words, it was only ever safe to have either a camp man or a drag queen on board, or it all ended up in tragedy and they flung themselves over a cliff.
More or less, yes. And the other thing is, I think the two actors that, have been in the storyline have done, a good job with the material that they've been given. The short version of this, the storyline, was that there was a character who came into Summer Bay, of course, as it's called, as a victim of crime, who then was introduced to a policewoman who had, up until this point, had been straight, and then there was some sort of attraction that started between them, and that had been bubbling away for a couple of weeks, which led up to this, this so-called kiss. A story then emanated last. Of course, once the mainstream press got wind of a gay character, and a potential kiss, the stories came out. Now, all of those protests that we heard about from lobby groups was all done on the basis of what was to come. In other words, none of them had actually seen any of that content, because up until then there hadn't been any attraction between the two, and indeed there are no preview DVDs of Home and Away that are generally distributed. In fact, I don't even get them. So none of them had seen the content, so it was simply a case of lobby groups furthering their own agenda by saying, this is wrong.
Which is pretty much usual for the right-wing pseudo-Christian brigade.
Well, it's pretty much a case of media getting their story, and, as I said, the lobby groups being able to further their own agenda. So it becomes something, I suppose, of a win-win, by putting the stories out there. And we should qualify the classification of Home and Away, which is PG at 7 o'clock. Now, that allows for the representation of heterosexual expression and homosexual expression in exactly the same degrees. So the PG classification doesn't make any distinction between, if you can have a straight kiss, can you have a gay kiss? It's a kiss is a kiss.
Yeah.
So they were, they were within their rights to do it. And then the story broke out last week that that Seven had censored the kiss, which, now that story also, I believe that story emanated from within Seven.
Right.
And attached to that were connotations that Seven was responding to a drop in figures. Now, they are figures that I haven't been able to verify. I don't know where this story comes from, that the figures have been dropping, or where that evidence is. But, of course, the network...
So the suggestion was that the lesbian storyline may have been turning viewers off. Is that what I'm getting
at? That was a suggestion, not one that I can verify. But let's not forget that the network sees a lot more detail in their figures. So they're able to see, what age groups are watching, they can track night on night, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, based on that, there was the suggestion that not that the kiss had been, see, this is the thing, not that the kiss was being cut, but that it was being censored. That was the original story, was that the kiss had been censored, not cut.
Okay.
Yeah, so David, in any case, sort of politics aside, let's cut to the chase. Was the kiss hot? Did it do it for you?
I think you're speaking to the wrong person.
As a viewer, of course.
Well, did it actually go ahead is the first thing.
Well, there was a kiss that went ahead on Tuesday night.
Right. And as far as we know, that's the kiss as originally filmed and planned.
I'm not convinced that's necessarily the case, because further to all of this story, and this has not got out there in the wider press, is the suggestion that the kiss that has been censored has not necessarily yet aired.
Adam.
Well, what I heard about the whole kiss incident was that it originally was going to be a lot more passionate, but since, due to the story elements, which was one of the characters admitting that she had homosexual feelings and that she'd never felt that way before, the writing staff decided that they wanted to tone down the kiss. And this was before a lot of the stories had broken out about the whole thing. So that's another thing I've heard.
That's not my understanding. My, from the show's point of view, they wanted it to air with some honesty. I believe that the network had some hesitations once they realised the reactions of the press and what the ratings were doing. So that the show, the producers and the writers and the actors have all attempted to perform with integrity here, and it's actually the network which has been suggested were the ones who got some cold feet.
Michael.
David, did you go to the kiss-off at Federation Square?
No, why would I go to a kiss-off?
Well, I thought you'd be interesting, I would have thought. If anything for... they're obviously desperate for publicity, which is exactly what they've got.
Well, see,
and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So, you know, that's the idea of commercial television, isn't it?
I think that we also need to look at, you know, how much we're all sort of fanning flames.
Yes.
You know?
Fun, though, isn't it?
No, I mean, this just gives them more publicity again.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, as I say, though.
But I think at the end of the day, David, isn't it true to say that I think that the general reaction has been positive? We have had a certain amount of outburst from, as I say, the usual small minority of people who give themselves a variety of different names whenever they want to stir up trouble around gay issues from their so-called Christian perspective. But they haven't really got a huge amount of traction. They've got coverage, certainly, but my feeling is that the general public reaction has been positive.
Certainly most most normal thinking people, reasonable adults, and again, the PG classification is based on what a reasonable adult would think, but the most of the responses has been, why is this an issue? And indeed, we should be looking, you know, those family groups who were protesting about this, and again pushing their own agenda, should be taking a much closer look at the level of violence which has infiltrated Home and Away, and in fact, the very character, you know, directly before the kiss, was being gaffer-taped and pushed under a bath of water before we got to the scene of the kiss. Now, this is at 7 o'clock. This is what the family groups are looking at. So, there are, you know...
That wouldn't get past Stephen Conroy's internet filter.
Yeah, so look, I think the level of violence that goes on in Summer Bay on a regular basis with serial killers and with kidnappers and with crazed gunmen is far more concerning than, you know, than a mere kiss. And indeed, let's not forget that Neighbours did this 4 years ago. Now, there was some stories about it at the time as well, but nowhere near the level that we're getting at the moment. And gay characters are seen at 5:30 in Out of the Blue on Sunday afternoons on Channel 10. Now, those characters don't get all, you know, worked up about, oh, is it a straight person falling for a gay person? Because I think that, you know, I think there are ramifications for that. I think by the time we get to the end of this story, which we will in a couple of weeks, when this character does end up leaving Summer Bay, we will sit back and we will go, what did we really achieve from this? And if we really wanted to put, you know, gay representation in a soap, couldn't we have done it in a far more, you know, less histrionic way?
Well, we've got a message from a listener here that probably feeds into that thought. If I was a policewoman or a lesbian, I would be offended at being portrayed as predatory and unprofessional in my work. And I haven't seen the show, so I don't know if that's an accurate representation of what's going on.
I wouldn't say, well, from what I've seen, I wouldn't say she was predatory. But you know, I think there are other ways of doing it. I think there are other shows, such as things like The Circuit or Secret Life of Us, where, you know, and indeed Out of the Blue is another one, where you've got gay characters who are just getting on with, you know, with their life, with other things that comprise up their, you know, their week that are concerns to them. But Home and Away trades off romance and indeed, you know, increasingly violence as well.
When would it be a man with a man, do we think?
Well, good question, Michael.
I wonder.
It's, you know,
and how much controversy would that cause?
Because, I mean, two lesbians is pretty kind of safe, isn't it?
It's actually... I don't know if it's safe or not from what the publicity that's generated, but it's more you know, that fantasy that, you know, perpetuated that men actually like seeing women together.
I think it's safer. This reminds me of the whole Marissa Cooper thing. I'm a huge television buff, so I remember a few years ago when the OC had their lesbian fling.
That's
Neighbours
right.
had their lesbian fling. It seems like the really safe thing to do when you want a queer character or queer representation in your show is to have a lesbian fling for a couple of weeks or a seasonal arc and then get rid of it. and then the characters revert back to normal afterwards.
Yeah, well, that's what happened in Neighbours as well, although I think they handled it pretty well.
The really old ones, you know, around here, though, can remember Don in number 96, which would have to be 30 or 40 years ago and it didn't result in the decline of Western civilization.
Well, who knows?
Yeah, what was his name, Jody in Soap, if you want to go back far enough?
Well, I guess the issue there is that they're not at 7 o'clock and not necessarily all those characters were kissing either. So it becomes, you know, Brothers and Sisters airs, you know, every week on the same network without any incident. Desperate Housewives has gay characters in that as well. Indeed, but they're not at 7 o'clock in the PG times, but although Neighbours was at 6:30.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, certainly in the UK, Home and Away is seen very much as a kids' show.
Yeah, I mean, that was the argument. They were saying that there was homosexuality being pitched to kids, but the OC is what I like to think is the definitive sort of teen show for its time. So to have a lesbian fling on the OC a few years ago at 8:30 on Channel 10, it's about an hour and a half away, but it was prime time and a lot of kids were watching that show. So
I suppose it does make a difference by it being earlier, though, because they're supposed to be parental guidance,
yes,
you know.
And these were Australian lesbians.
Yes.
Yeah, but what I'm saying also is that, you know, out of the blue screens at 5:30 on a Sunday.
Mm. Yeah.
No one's upset about that. No one's upset about the fact that Gavin was in the block at 6:30 many, many years ago, you know, were heroes of that show. Now, I'm sure they would have had shown affection to one another in the block many, many years ago. It's just a genre that is different to soap, I suppose.
I think it still comes down, at the end of the day, to homophobia. I read in the paper a woman commenting, saying, I just do not want my children to see that kind of stuff. But as you say before, violence is okay.
Yeah, and I think that's something nobody ever wants to talk about. They're quite happy to let violence go by the board in all sorts of things and in all quite extreme ways at all times of the day, but anything to do with sex, and they all get very lathered up. David, thanks very much for your time tonight. And
thanks,
your usual very intelligent contribution.
Cheers.
Taking some of the heat out of this and providing a bit of light. That was David Knox there from TV Tonight.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
Yes. And it's on Joy 94.9 with me, Doug Pollard, and with me in the studio tonight, Ron Thiel, Michael Dalton and Adam Christou. Now, we've had a few SMSs in response to our last item about Home and Away. John says, the Herald Sun beat up the story and got what they wanted, a reaction from the Conservatives. Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. And this one, I think, is for you, Adam. Did I really hear you say revert back to normal? Come on, I expect better from Joy.
I know you expect better from Joy, but unfortunately, this is what the television shows give us with their character arcs and narratives. So when you look at the way that they plot their characters, they revert back to a state before they had homosexual experiences or encounters or meaningful relationships, as though the entire thing has been erased. And as horrible as it sounds, and I think it's important that you brought it up, that's how the television shows treat it. So I don't think I should beat around the bush and just be honest about how I see it.
In other words, the TV shows make it out to be an abnormal aberration.
It is. It's sort of like a huge thing and then
come back to being normality. Yeah. I take your point. I think you were being a wee bit ironic.
Yes.
Let's allow you that. Now, do you use sites like Gaydar or Manhunt? Do you look at porn online? Pretty soon, that might be a lot more difficult if the government succeeds in putting in place its proposed two-tier internet blocking system. And you needn't look around, gentlemen. I know you all do. The proposed internet filter will create a blacklist of some sites that it will block and make it illegal to view or link to. Things like child porn and extreme violence. And a second list of sites that will also be blocked unless you ask for an unfiltered feed. That will be more mainstream kind of porn and dating sites like Gaydar and Manhunt and so forth. But critics say that since the list of sites permanently blocked will itself be secret, and the mechanism for putting sites on that blacklist won't be transparent, some sites that ought not to be blocked will be. And the recent leaking of the alleged current blacklist, which included such evil sites as a boarding kennels and a Queensland dentist, does rather seem to prove the point. Other critics go further and say there's no point to the proposed system at all, as it will not block, for example, peer-to-peer file sharing, which is how most kiddie porn gets around, and it'll be relatively simple for anybody even slightly tech-savvy to evade anyway. A group called Electronic Frontiers Australia has been very vocal in campaigning against these proposals, and their spokesperson, Geordie Guy, is on the line now. Good evening, Geordie.
G'day, guys. How you doing?
Now, you don't like this any more than I do, by the sounds of things.
No, we don't like it at all. And it's probably pretty safe to say that the overwhelming majority of people who understand what's going ahead don't like it one bit.
Is it actually practical?
No. In your introduction, you did quite well at explaining some of the reasons why it's not practical. Predominantly, a lot of the material that the government's seeking to block with this stuff isn't traded on the web anyway, so they're a bit on the back foot with that one. Also, as you say, anybody who... I don't think you'd even need to be tech-savvy, as long as you can sort of type a search on how do I get around the Australian filter. The way it's looking to be implemented, it's kind of like 30% of a pool fence.
30% of a pool fence.
Yeah.
Now, why do you object to it? I mean, what do you have a philosophical objection to the censorship as well, or is it just that it's impractical?
Well, we've got a wheelbarrow full of objections to it, but some of the more serious ones are that you talked a little bit before about the two-tier system where it proposed a list of stuff that no Australian can view and no Australian can know what's on that list, and then another optional feed that people can opt out of. Now, the problem with the opt-out list is pretty obvious. It does involve that if you do want some alone time on the computer, so to speak, you need to ring up your internet company and ask for that. And that's something that might be pretty hard for people to do.
It also might be a bit difficult if you're sharing a connection and some of the people in the house are children and some of the people in the house are adults.
Well, yeah, I mean, not that I'd advocate anybody in a couple sort of providing that sort of information, but in a lot of cases what you look up on the internet's your call, and if you get an internet bill at the end of the month that says it's for your unfiltered connection and you hadn't run that past your partner, I'm not sure what they think about that. So yeah, there's a privacy problem there. The problem with the mandatory list is much graver. If we're going to have a list of websites that no Australian's allowed to go to, we need transparency around what goes on that list. Now, Senator Conroy, who's championing all this, says that we can't know what's on that list because the point of the list is that no one's allowed to know about these websites. But what we're concerned about is, if you have a list like that, how does stuff get on it and what sort of stuff does get on it? A lot of the people who are pushing for this, the Christian conservative lobby, these aren't people who have historically had really good friendships with a lot of stuff out there that they don't agree with, but is perfectly legal. Christian fundamentalists aren't usually big supporters of gay rights, so we do need to keep an eye on what sort of people would be petitioning the government to have stuff banned.
Now, let me just break in there, because as I understand it, one of the ways that things get on the blacklist is if somebody rings up and complains.
Well, at the moment, that's the case. Yeah, we all kind of got back-footed a couple of nights ago when Senator Conroy went on an SBS TV program.
Yes, I saw that on Insight. Yeah,
yeah, when this first came out, it was proposed in 2007, just after the election. It was based on the Australian Communications and Media Authority blacklist. Now, that blacklist is in existence, has been for about 9 years, and people ring up and they complain or go to ACMA's website and complain about stuff that they think's not okay. Now, that list at the moment currently just gets given to companies that make software that you can install on your computer as a basis for the websites that you can block on your own computer if you've got kids in the house.
Right.
The plan was to have that implemented in full. Now, Senator Conroy has had a big backlash over that, and now he's saying, well, no, not the whole list, just bits of it and the worst bits of it, but still hasn't really said what, and still hasn't really said how his government or a government in a year's time or 5 or 25 years' time is going to resist pressure from all these people that have an agenda to put stuff they don't like on the list.
Yeah, because the point about this is that once the system is there in place, we may have a relatively benign government in place at the moment, but once the mechanism is there to block whatever people don't want to block, there's no guarantee that some future government might want to block things that we would want to have access to.
Exactly.
If that's not too confusingly put.
We've seen that already with...
Surely, though, the central question is, I mean, what are these politicians doing stopping me from accessing information about legal activities?
Absolutely.
What on earth are these people doing?
We have X-rated material is legal to buy in Canberra and the Northern Territory. And you can mail order it or whatever else from anywhere else in the country. Our material is on the blacklist as well if it doesn't have an ACMA-approved age verification system.
Now, this will also catch games as well, as I understand it.
Well, games are a little bit trickier because in Australia, we're pretty much the only country around that doesn't have an adult rating for games. So if it's not good enough for a 15-year-old kid, it's out in Australia. And it's illegal to import it.
Adam?
I've been following the censorship deal with video games for a while now, and I find it interesting that Stephen Conroy sort of joined forces with the South Australian senator who's been blocking sort of all discussion about the concept of an R rating for video games. And it seems like this scary minority that's having a lot of say in how we think and what we should consume as adults. And for me, that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it is pretty scary, although I'm pretty sure the South Australian Attorney General is really happy that someone joined him on this because he was really getting a hammering from everyone who's been following it.
Okay, Michael.
Geordie, what do you think, what should be done then? How do we monitor what goes on and how do we stop child porn and extreme violence?
Well, if we stop the moral terror and outrage for a bit here and just have a look at what child porn and child sexual abuse is, it's an illegal activity. And we've had for thousands of years a way of dealing with illegal activities. We've got these guys that go around in blue uniforms, and they go around stopping people from doing the wrong thing. The group of the AFP called OCSET are the guys who prosecute and chase down people who are into child porn. Now, they were to have a big funding increase, but their funding increase has been dropped down by about $8 million. What should happen is they should get resources so they can go around and deal with this the same way that we deal with all sorts of other illegal
stuff. So the money that's being spent and the time that's being spent on trying to stop people having their, well, basic freedom taken away from them could be spent on actually clamping down on the things that are illegal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this thing is slated to cost $48 million right out of the gate. Now, I'm not an expert on law enforcement policy, but I'm pretty sure if you rolled up to AFP headquarters with a $48 million check, they'd be able to sort out something. Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Look, we're going to have to cut it short there, Geordie, because we're running behind time here, but thanks very much for that. Keep up the good fight, I think, is the message from everybody here.
Okay, thanks for your time, guys.
You're welcome. That was Geordie Guy from Electronic Frontiers Australia. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back. Doug Pollard here on Joy 94.9, and with me in the studio, Michael Dalton, Adam Christou and Ron Thiel. Now, we were just talking now about the government's plans to block certain sex-related material on the internet, and now we have the story of the Sydney Leather Pride Association's decision not to post some videos because of concerns they could end up with being blocked. Harley Dennett of Sydney Star Observer is on the line, and he has that story. Evening, Harley.
Good evening, Doug.
So what's going on here with... Leather Pride Association trying to put up on the web here?
What they've been planning to do for some time is to put up educational and safety videos, presentations, material from their the workshops that they would present to their members, so that those members can and general members of the public who are interested can engage in activities while being knowing what precautions they need to take for their own health, legally, those kinds of really basic educational things. And it's for activities that I'm not sure how many of these things I can actually say on the radio, but
you're on a gay radio station.
Yeah, give it a go. Yeah,
from fisting upwards.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about fetish. We're talking about S&M. We're talking about bondage. We're talking about those kind of things. Yeah,
we are.
Yeah,
some of these things are illegal as far as courts are concerned. They believe some of these things you cannot reasonably consent to, but. They are practiced, so this group is trying to make it safe for people. They want to put it up, but unfortunately, with the threat of this internet filter, they're looking at other ways of possibly doing this.
Yeah, because one of the categories that's restricted, as I understand it, is what's called sexual violence, isn't it? Which I suppose some of this could come under.
It's a really vague term, and what does violence mean? It doesn't in any way define consensual in there, so while the courts have sometimes decided that you can consent to things, other times not. And if it's on a website, how do you know that every party involved has consent, even in an educational video? So what they're thinking of doing is putting a block on it so that you have to be over 18. Mm-hmm. Before and a member, so that they can have some checks and balances there. But at the same time, that may not be legal in the system because, once the filter's in place, because they don't know. At the moment, those adult verification systems only protect the content provider if it's on a mobile phone. Doesn't apply to the internet. So there's this huge legal gap there at the moment.
So they have they posted some of these videos then, but not the most explicit or illegal ones then, is it?
No, not yet. At the moment, they just run the workshops,
right,
and they've produced some of these presentations, but they're not sure what to do. They're still deciding, and as long as they're seeking legal advice, but what legal advice can somebody really get at the moment when it seems like even the minister, the relevant minister involved, isn't quite clear on what the policy is from day to day?
Why don't they just post them then and see what happens from there?
I think that people have done things like that in the past, and it's tended to lead to arrest. So I can understand them being a little bit cautious.
That might be why, then.
Can you just imagine, though, you know, trying to fight another campaign like the AIDS campaign, or indeed any broad, you know, social activism, social change type of sort of campaign with this sort of censorship going on? It's just outrageous.
On the other hand, wouldn't that galvanise the community? Wouldn't that really...
Well, they wouldn't have any way of talking to each other. That's the problem.
Well, yes, they would, because this filtering system doesn't touch peer-to-peer systems, does it?
Yeah, but so I mean...
You can still talk to
you've got to be savvy. I mean, you know, it's almost like a South African freedom of association law that, you know, prevents people from gathering in a public place. I mean, it's the internet equivalent.
I think also that they're... I don't think it's 100% necessary to have a video on how to fist, is it? If you want to do it, you should be able to find out from somebody, but seeing videos on it, I don't think it's necessary.
Well, I think the argument that Leather Pride had about that was that some people might want to try it, but they might be too shy to go to
a
workshop.
It's a harm minimisation.
Too shy to go to a workshop, I think.
It's a harm minimisation strategy. Essentially, it's saying, look, you know, we don't make judgments about what people do, but if they do it, we want it to be as safe as possible, which is what underpinned all of the successful health education of the last 20 years, and all of that will be snuffed out by this sort of thing.
I think it's incredibly dangerous.
Well, I
agree, and I think it's a great idea that they should be able to find out some way, but... I don't necessarily think it should be posted. I think you are...
Well, yeah. there's lots of ways we can tackle all this, and I can see objections on both sides. One of the things that we're getting caught up on here is, how do you verify the age of somebody who's actually looking at a computer screen?
Well, you can't.
And the short answer is you can't, unfortunately. Can you think of any way, Harley?
Well, I actually have a computer science degree. I've worked in the industry. I can't think of anything. None of them work. And when I was under 18, I could certainly get around anything.
Yeah, even on a computer.
Yeah.
Okay, Harley, look, we're going to have to call it a day there. Thank you very much for your time tonight, and we'll speak to you again soon. That was Harley Dennett there from Sydney Star Observer. Okay, we'll take a little break there. You're listening to The Rainbow Report, Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. As regards Centrelink, we will be running another Whole of the Rainbow Report program with Hank Yongan, the General Manager of Centrelink, on April 26th to get a feedback on how this thing is progressing. There's already a lot of criticism around the fact that he's only running radio ads and magazine ads in the gay press and not writing to everybody who might be affected by it. So that and various other issues we'll raise with him on April 26th. Do get in touch with us at Joy if you have questions you'd like to ask him. Now, we've had some SMSs on our last item there, talking about the internet filter and its effects. Senator Conroy had a child a few years ago via surrogacy. He's personalised the issue because he wants to protect his daughter. He wanted a family desperately for more than 4 years. Maybe. And Jay says, relax, people. A bill's not even been debated in Parliament about internet censorship, and already they're backpedalling, and the Liberals are not supporting the bill. So, you know, I guess the message there is, it may never happen. Well, let's move to something a little bit more light-hearted, shall we?
Hurrah.
A couple of years ago, the youth-oriented radio station Nova here in Melbourne started a gay show late at night called The Stick Shift. Now, Nova Brisbane has decided it needs a gay show too, and fronting it is Lee Buchanan, last seen on Project Runway, and he's on the line now. The show's called Campus Tits, Lee. Are you?
It is. Oh, I am often, yes. Most of the time. Except when I'm straight acting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's only when you're on gay now.
Exactly.
Rest of the time you are as Campus Tits. Okay, I'm glad we got that one sorted. Project Runway to Nova on the radio. How are you finding the transition?
Oh, it's all right. It's a bit crazy, a bit fun. I met Michelle Laurie, who I do Campus Tits with on Sunday nights, and I met her at the finale show of Project Runway, and she interviewed Julie and I. Julie was the winner, and we had such a laugh and a lot of fun, and basically she wanted to do something with me, so she thought up a show and decided Campus Tits was going to happen.
And what do you do on this show? What kind of areas do you cover?
It's very lighthearted. It's more just sort of, it's a Sunday night filler. We have a big gay night in Brisbane at one of the major nightclubs. And so it's sort of just, you know, when they're getting ready to go out to Fluffy, everyone's sort of getting their glad rags on. So we're filling the airwaves with a bit of fluff.
I can see Adam nodding away over there.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of you, Lee. I watched Project Runway obsessively. I got into whole Henry Salmon ties, the whole thing.
And
I have to say sorry, though, because you should have won. And I, yeah.
Are you angling for a spot up in Brisbane too, Adam?
Lee, what did, it's Michael here, what did Project Runway do for you?
Well, it introduced me to Michelle Laurie.
Yeah.
It's opened a lot of doors. I'm still working at Easton Pearson, which is an international fashion label based in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a few things on the side. I've done a few wedding dresses. And,
oh,
I made a dress for Tina Arena, who's sort of one of my idols.
Yeah, I bet.
I got to have lunch with her, and we went shopping.
Yeah, she was here at Joy the other day, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yay. She's so divine.
Yes.
I just want to give her some cake. I think she needs to eat. She's so skinny.
Yeah, she did look that, yes. Very, 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 very lightweight.
No one ever says that to me, funny enough. So, on Campus Tits, then, it's music and fluff. We have a lot of that here at Joy as well.
Oh, yay. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Occasionally we get some sort of deep and meaningfuls, but they usually end up in fits of laughter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's Nova. It's not like it's supposed to be a 19 to 24 year old demographic, so they don't like talking about the heavy stuff on a Sunday night.
Well, give us an idea of some of your recent guests.
Recent guests? Oh goodness. We had the curator of the Brisbane Queer Film Festival on, Sarah Neal. She's fabulous. And we have a section called Leisure Time. So Sarah came on for Leisure Time, and we talked about the Queer Film Festival, which is coming up this weekend and next week. It's huge. There's so many festivals.
Yeah, we've just had one here, and that's also run by a very savvy lesbian too.
Oh, fabulous.
What is it with lesbians and queer film, I wonder?
I don't know.
Well, there's a deep and meaningful question for you for the next program.
Yay. We need them. Well,
yeah.
We don't. I always try and bring in some, you know, some current issues, and the girls are just like, no, we're not talking about that. No, we're talking about, we do a Queer's Campus Tits book club where we judge books solely by their covers.
That's great.
Yeah, if it's going to look good on our
especially for radio
on the bookshelf.
Yeah. I do a similar show, which is all fluff, on a Friday night called Holding It In with Lulu McClatchy. And we have a segment called What Irks You, where we get to talk about what gets on our nerves. So I might try and do the judging a book by its cover.
Yes.
We'll swap.
Gorgeous.
Okay, well, it sounds like you two ought to get together off air and swap a few ideas.
Indeed.
Anyway, Lee, good luck with the show.
Thank you.
And let's hope it opens yet more doors for you.
Yes.
Okay. That was Lee Buchanan there from Nova up in what he calls Bris Vegas. I guess he means Brisbane with the glossy bits. Speaking of things being camp as tits, it's time for our other favourite drag identity, Kay Sera, to once again peer beneath the bonnet, top up the oil and water, and give our camp sensibilities their weekly service.
We are in a deep, dark catacomb of a grand cathedral. There's a dank smell in the air, like rotting wood, or is that rotting flesh? The Anglican Archbishop of Melbourne has arranged a secret meeting with the Ayatollah, the former Iranian president, a so-called moderate cleric. The two men eye each other off through a curtain of cobwebs. The bishop carries a cheap, chunky port-a-flood torch. The Ayatollah has his iPhone switched to the torch setting and is shining the muted beam directly in the face of his opponent. It's all very, very dramatic, like a scene from a B-grade Stephen King telemovie. After a while, the Archbishop breaks the deadly silence. "How many queens does it take to decorate a catacomb?" he says defiantly. The Ayatollah ponders the question as if it were a long-lost text from the Quran. "It can't be done," he says, stroking his beard. "Everybody knows decorators only work in a dedicated team." Now, clearly this is not the content of the recent meeting between the Archbishop of Melbourne and the Ayatollah, but it is the comedy festival and, well, the nature of this meeting of minds is anybody's guess. One thing's for sure, it's unlikely human rights in Iran, namely the shocking persecution of homosexuals, was at the top of the agenda. If I had my way, I'd lock both men up in a basement somewhere in the inner city with comedy cabaret queen Yana Alana. If her genital routine doesn't get to them, nothing will. The power of a decent pussy poem should not be underestimated, even in Iran, or the Anglican Church for that matter. Speaking of pussies and other rude bits and pieces down there, I'm so pleased to see that Mr. Censorship, the Honourable Stephen Conroy, has seen the light. In the face of his pending trial into internet filters, and prompted by the leaking of a blacklist that included, if you like, everyday garden variety porn, Steve Baby has retreated, claiming the filter will only be directed at material that fails to gain classification. Apparently that's the really, really nasty stuff. Of course, the fact that the classification board works on a system of complaints seems to have been lost in this debate. Here's how it works. Mr. and Mrs. Family First catch a glimpse of a Chi-Chi La Rue film starring hunky Marco Blaze. You know, he's the porn star that took over Smith Street recently. Well, if you accept the fact that Family First are representative of decent-minded citizens, now, these are the words of the classification board, not mine. And really, why wouldn't you? One of their members is elected to the Senate. Then such a complaint might very well be upheld. Well, lock me in a room with Yana Alana, but you may as well give said porn to the Ayatollah for classification. And we haven't even gotten into spanking and the kinky world of hetero fetish yet. God forbid that should come before the classification board in this brave new world of censorship and the internet filter. All of a sudden I want to go away and do a crash course in computer hacking. Now where did I put that CAE brochure? Surely there's a course on offer for disenchanted sex-crazed citizens. I'm Kay Serrar, and just like Yana Alana, I'm all for the art of the pussy. Although, I prefer to wear my pussy on the outside, and preferably as a gorgeous pussy bow.
Well, what can I say to that except possibly, yay. Yay, okay, Sarah. She's definitely across the issues there, Michael, wouldn't you say?
Oh, we love Kay Sarah, don't we? I could listen to Kay for minutes.
She's one switched-on gal, that one.
Mm-hmm.
But coming back to the more serious things we were talking about before, this censorship business is actually quite scary. I know no bill's been put up. I know everyone's saying it's not going to happen. I know everyone's saying everybody's against it and all the rest of it. But the government seem pretty determined to try and shove this through if they can. Is that your feeling, Rob?
Well, look, we of all communities, you know, should know that most of the work in these things going through is done well before the bill actually enters the parliament. And, you know, they are. And on the one hand, they've got, you know, Senator Faulkner up there, you know, promoting openness and transparency and a really good civil rights lobby within the Labor Party. And then on the other hand, they're engaging in a retrograde act of censorship, which would probably make the Chinese blush, I would think.
Is this all about keeping Fielding on side for whatever reason? Because if it is, it doesn't seem to be working.
No, it certainly doesn't. I mean, you know, the guy's an absolute loose cannon. But it seems like it's the latest campaign by the extreme right. They won't lie down, these people. They're obsessed about controlling other people and, you know, controlling what they think. And it's slipped under reasonable people's radar and got a hell of a long way down the development track. And people really do have to wake up because, I mean, you know, they start with this and then they can basically ban anything that they don't like. And that's catastrophic for social change, which we all rely on.
You have to talk about it now because it might not be up for the vote yet and it may never get through. But if you don't talk about it now and know what side you're on, it will go through and then we won't be ready for it. So like many things, we need to talk about it, get it out there and get it discussed and get the right decision.
Yeah. Adam, can I ask you, how do you see this? I mean, you know, people like me and Ron have been doing campaigning on these sort of issues for a very long time. You're pretty much of a newbie in the midst of all this. How do you see this filter thing? I mean, do you see it as a practical proposition on the one hand, and do you see it as a desirable thing at all?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'm a child of the Howard generation. That's what I grew up and that's what I know. And I got to experience that culture war growing up. And I think we're on the cusp of another culture war about morality this time, and about moral issues. And when you have a prime minister going onto daytime television talking about a photographer and an artist and calling it reprehensible and disgusting, it starts to sort of show you the sort of culture that we're living in and questions and values that we're talking about. And I think it's going to impact on a lot of freedom of speech, freedom of rights and stuff like gay marriage for a long time. And it's certainly, I think gay rights and queer rights are really not going to, we're not going to have the sort of change that we wanted on such a grand scale when Howard left. And I think it's going to be a very slow thing. And I think for a Western nation, I think we're going to be one of the slowest to adopt marriage or civil rights and that sort of stuff.
And that is quite sad, really, because, I mean, we've had news through in the last day or two that Sweden has become the latest country to legalize gay marriage. You know, we keep dropping further and further behind. And, of course, Proposition 8 still coming back to a vote in the court in California, so we might get gay marriage back there. Another couple of American states thinking about taking it on board. I mean, and we're still stuck in the dark ages. How well, never mind. We're out of time again, I'm afraid. My guests tonight in the studio, Adam Christou, Michael Dalton and Ron Thiel. On the phone, Harley Dennett of Sydney Star Observer, Geordie Guy of Electronic Frontiers Association, Lee Buchanan from Nova's aptly named Camp as Tits, and David Knox from TV Tonight. And of course, K-Sara once more bent over for us to look beneath the bonnet. Big thanks also to you. Thanks for spending your time with us, and thank you for your contributions. The show is produced by Bianca Johnston. Technical production is by Michael Bayliss. Don't forget, you can download a podcast of the show from the Joy website within a day or two. I'm Doug Pollard, and I'll see you again next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station, committed to providing a voice for the diverse DLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.